must have been an annoying child. Whenever my family complained about the usual indignities of interacting with other humans, people who didn't return phone calls, not being invited to a party, an unkind comment, and what they might mean, "She's rude. He doesn't like me. That was mean." I, age 10, would respond with a list of reasons why that person might have done whatever they did that might actually not be about slighting my family member. Maybe she's too busy. Maybe he didn't get the message. Maybe it was a mistake. Maybe there's something going on in her life that we don't know about. You might say I had an overdeveloped empathy gene. And so when I began the practice of intentionally living Unitarian Universalism's first principle of affirming and promoting the inherent worth and dignity of every person, I had the advantage of a natural tendency to give people the benefit of the doubt, to not immediately take offense, to imagine there might be more going on than I knew. This tendency is particularly helpful in my work as a hospital chaplain, where I minister to patients, families, and staff who are under so much stress that they don't always behave well. It helps me to remember that the anger, rudeness, and brush-offs are almost never about me. As a chaplain, part of my job is to offer support when folks are upset, to create space where anger and fear and overwhelm can be expressed safely. I also practice looking beyond the emotions of the moment for the spark of the sacred in each person. I do this pretty well with most patients, families, and staff. Where I've been most challenged are with a series of toxic bosses. Perhaps you know the feeling. I've had a few doozies recently where I found myself so angry at how they were treating me and my coworkers that I seriously considered quitting this job that I love. Instead, I started a Buddhist loving kindness practice. As I drove to work each morning, I'd start by wishing myself well. May I be safe. May I be well. May I know joy. May I be free. And then I'd wish the very same things for the toxic boss who was making us all so miserable. May you be safe. May you be well. May you know joy. May you be free. I'd mix it up sometimes. May you be appreciated. May your work be satisfying. And again, I'd wish these things first for myself and then for my boss. As I truly wished these things for my boss, I realized that I really didn't wish her harm. I just wanted her to stop hurting people I cared about. In fact, if she was truly safe and well and joyful, she might not be so awful to work under. Doing this practice didn't turn her into a saint. In fact, it probably didn't change her at all. But it did change me. It softened my heart a little, so that when I did need to interact with her, I wasn't as reactive. I could entertain the possibility that there was more going on for her than I knew. that she might be suffering herself, even as she inflicted suffering on others. And fortunately, eventually, she moved on. I still wish her well and am so grateful to do so at a distance. And now I invite you to remain seated as we sing a loving kindness meditation. We'll sing it for ourselves first, then for someone else, then for a group of people, and then for the world. Since this is the first time we're singing this meditation here, our song leaders will sing the first verse so that we can hear it, and then all of us will join in singing the first verse. The words are on the screen.
When loving someone becomes a challenge, when it may be difficult to identify with someone who strikes you as the most mean-spirited, obnoxious person you have ever met, how do you affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person? How do you find this worth and dignity? Generally speaking, whenever possible, it is best to avoid such people as much as possible. Having feelings of dislike and possibly hate is toxic to the system. Yours, not theirs. I became a minister because, by and large, I do not harbor such feelings very often until I do. I remember as a nurse having patients who pretty much disliked everyone and everything, and they tended to take their unhappiness out on the nurses. Whatever the reason, either I volunteered or inherited these patients by default, as one by one, other nurses refused to care for him or her. And because I was aware of their inherent worth and dignity, although I wouldn't have called it that at the time, I would care for them in spite of their behavior. The classic experience I had as a chaplain was with the Obama the Antichrist patient. Let's call her Betty. Not the woman on the screen. I want to make that clear. Not because of her political views, because in fact she barely had any. That would have required caring about something outside of her immediate surroundings. Betty was a classic narcissist. I know I'm not a psychologist, but this lady left her husband laying on the floor for 2 days without calling anyone until one of their daughters came over and discovered her father on the floor. That daughter never spoke to her mother again. And of course, Betty had no idea why. She was probably the most selfish person I have ever met. She was like that old joke about the person who wanted sympathy for being an orphan after having killed both her parents. Yet I knew that as a chaplain, it was my job to love her, to give her what she so desperately needed as she was dying. And although I occasionally harbored feelings of hypocrisy, I really had little difficulty in giving her that love. In fact, it is not as a minister or a chaplain that I have the most trouble. It is when I see a certain person on TV. I try to avoid this as much as possible, but my reaction is literally physically alarming. I feel a kind of hate that does no one any good and possibly harms me. That is the kind of challenge where I have to reach deep, deep, deep down. And this is what I have found that has helped me. At one point, all of us, including he who shall not be named, was born. And it follows that at some point he was a helpless infant. That infant I can at least try to love. And that is what I do when confronted with someone I have trouble with accepting as a human being. I imagine that person as an infant. Then it's okay because I know the potential is there. I know the inherent worth and dignity is there. And I know that harboring feelings of hate and resentment is detrimental to my health, and treating other people as if they were less than human solves absolutely nothing and perpetuates bad behavior, because in fact, there is not one of us who is less than human. Sometimes we just have to look at being human ourselves and note that we have to recognize the inherent worth and dignity in ourselves in order to recognize it in others. If I am feeling hateful and resentful, I may be reflecting the behavior, the feelings of that other person, which may only perpetuate the toxicness that exists in our world. So I leave you with this. When the need arises, take care, be patient, love yourself as you would have others love you, spread that love, generate peace, and remember babies, 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 or perhaps kittens or puppies, or whatever inspires feelings of the kind of love that lives in what you find most holy. Amen.
There is a grouchy ladybug at my children's elementary school. She's different from me. She sees the glass as half empty because someone intentionally drank half of it to spite her, kind of ladybug. I was not in the voting booth with her, but I am confident she voted very differently than me in 2016. And I didn't have an awesome relationship with her prior to that time. We have kids in the same class, so some interaction is unavoidable. There have been no harsh words spoken, no tangible problems. It's just I know I'm polite and public, and I seethe with anger at home, reading her comments on our school's Facebook page. So the inherent worth and dignity of every person, it gets tricky when it's up close and personal. In my volunteer work with the homeless folks in Richmond and El Sobrante, it's easier for me to see the inherent worth and dignity. I understand that there are stories that I may never know about, how folks ended up on the streets unsheltered. I can imagine from my experience working with people that is varied. It may have started with broken relationships in immediate or chosen families. I can imagine it has to do with tragedy or missed opportunities or choices they wish they could change. I can see the global issues that cause these tragedies, and I can rail against these inequalities in my mind. When I'm protesting injustice, commemorating a civil rights leader like Dr. King, with my side of love stole, representing my UU faith and my congregation, I have little trouble remembering the worth and dignity of those around me. Whether they be grouchy ladybugs or activists, I enjoy seeing. But when I take that stole off and I drive the van on I-80, it becomes a chore to keep the inherent worth and dignity of the driver who just cut me and my children off in the forefront of my mind. And when I'm interacting with this ladybug at school, I also have to work at it. I work at remembering that my first impression of her was when she was in the middle of a broken relationship and learning how to be a single parent. I work at remembering that even though I abhor her politics and the way she speaks to others sometimes, her kid is really nice. And on field trips, he was in my van and he was a joy to chaperone. I work on remembering that as the years have passed, I think she's been less angry at everyone. And I don't know why that has changed, but I am happy for her. So just as I teach my children, we don't take bullying and abuse from anyone, and we don't demonize the bulliers or the abusers. I try to remind my kids that some kid may have had a horrible night, maybe living with dad and not seeing mom, maybe hungry or sad, may just not know how to control their impulses. I remind them that we never know what's going on for other people, and I ask them to assume the best. Because for me and my family, seeing the inherent worth and dignity in everybody that is not earned but given is a lifelong struggle. It's that struggle to uphold our Unitarian Universalist religious values in the wider world. And I remind myself and them of that each morning before we go to school.
My future gig. My community ministry of spiritual guidance I call the Path of Joy, empowering solutions benefiting everyone, because that's what I actually believe in. About half my work is in private practice as a spiritual director with individuals and couples and families, and about half of it is with congregations. Usually I'm helping them learn how to stay in covenant and work together respectfully while they resolve tensions and conflict. And the true story is that after one of these weekends recently, a retired Navy commander who was part of the congregation said to me, "You should be working with the Senate." I said, "That sounds good to me. She said, I'm serious. Do you mind if I call my senator and say that I think you should be hired? I said, I'm on the next plane the minute the call comes. It seemed a bit ironic to me because actually in 2016, when our current administration came in Washington, like many of you perhaps, and certainly many people in our country, I was shocked and deeply dismayed. I didn't know at first how I would work with that within myself. And what I came up with was, I would imagine myself getting a phone call to come and be White House chaplain. I was ready to go. I didn't so much imagine that I would succeed in changing our president's perspective, though I've had some fantasies along that line. More, I imagined being present, telling the truth as I saw it with love. I imagined being in the presence of someone who I perceived to be deeply and profoundly in need of affirmation. Truth and love together to the best of my ability. I chose that because my commitment to the inherent worth and dignity of every person can't stop short anywhere, or what does it mean? And the how that I do that is to remember that whatever actions people are taking, whatever strategies they're choosing to meet their pain, come out of universal human needs that you and I and everyone has also. And what people are choosing at the time arises out of the worldview, it arises out of their own development, and I can at least model something different and better. I deeply believe that anyone who dehumanizes others has been dehumanized him or herself. And I know that growing up in wealth and privilege is no protector against this form of abuse that leaves its mark forever. So the how that I stay in touch is remembering the common human needs that another person is seeking to meet. And the why is that I believe with my brother Jesus that love is the only transformative force in the world. Love your enemy in two of the Gospels, Mark and Luke. And I believe with theologian Teilhard de Chardin that the problem is not the religion of Jesus has been tried and found wanting, but that the religion of Jesus has never been tried. But I'm trying. I'm interested, I'm willing, and I'm committed to living my life in the covenant of holding the inherent worth and dignity of every person as sacred, because that's my greatest chance to transform the world. And I also stand with social activist Brian Stevenson, who has said, there is no wholeness outside of our reciprocal humanity. No wholeness outside of our reciprocal humanity. And so I stand ready. There I am when the call comes. But in my heart, I'm open, and I hold that openness that I invite you to also, that your humanity is the transformative force in the world when you stay centered in love. May it be so.